And we have been through quite a walk this week. As the writer of Ecclesiastes has tried to tell us, you don't want to live under the sun. You don't want to live a life without God. And you'll recall back on Monday, what he did was he started and he said, I have tried this like a scientific experiment. I have tried living without God and letting wealth replace that and letting earthly wisdom replace that. And it was a total failure. And he ended that particular observation by saying, it looks to me like the happiest person is the one who is satisfied with what God has provided and uses it for that service. On Tuesday, we started with the second view. He starts over again, basically the same thing. He ends it the same way. Wednesday, we looked at the third, and Thursday, yesterday, we looked at the fourth. And in all of these observations of life, he's making for us the same point over and over. Now, he approaches it in different ways. But he says, there are things that you are just not going to understand as humans, that God knows and God's got fully under control, so just don't worry about it. Just understand that certain things are in the hands of God, and when you know that, and when you're satisfied with what he's given you, then you'll appreciate what this life is all about. Now today, as we move really into the finale of the book, what everything has been building for, we're going to look first of all at what he says about a couple of topics that we have been following all along. As he gets to this section, I really don't know how much of a break he would have considered between chapters 10 and 11. But we're going to make a little bit of a break here anyway. And he's going to address two ideas that he's really been pushing throughout the entirety of the book. And interestingly enough, as we come to this grand conclusion, he's going to go back to this idea of work. Now remember, he says this is something that bothers people under the sun. They work hard. They're good workers, and they work hard, and they amass fortunes, and they die, and they leave it to a fool. Or they work hard, and here's this guy over here who's dishonest and corrupt, and he gets all the money, and this person gets nothing. So he's been addressing this, and he says, under the sun, this is a major problem. But now he's going to tell us a little bit about it from transcending the sun's standpoint. Talking about it from the standpoint of, here is the person who understands that you don't live life under the sun. Here is the person who understands that you're going to do things in the way that God desires. And he tells us some very interesting things about working. First of all, he says, part of your work, indeed he starts out this section with this, needs to be done in service to others. That's such an important concept, and he puts it in a rather unusual way. If you look here in verses 1 and 2, he says, cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a portion to seven or even to eight, for you know not what disaster may happen on earth. I think the idea here of this casting your bread upon the waters is doing good things for other people. And this is reminiscent of the things that Jesus would teach when he says, you need to be doing good for others, expecting nothing in return. So here is someone, the writer says, who has the opportunity to provide for seven, to provide for eight. That's exactly what he's going to do. He goes out with no concern for himself, completely selfless in this. He does it for others. But then the writer says, something we need to understand is that one day we're going to need somebody doing something good for us. Now, the gist of this is not do good for others so they'll do good for you. That would entirely miss the point. But the point that he is making is when he says do good for others with the understanding that one day you're going to experience something like this. One day you're going to need something in return. And won't it be nice when there are people selflessly caring for you? You have that same spirit. And I tell you, that concept is just so strongly intertwined in the Bible that we leave self out of it. But again, let's put it in the context of our book. When we're thinking under the sun, who is our biggest concern? It's us, isn't it? I don't understand this. I didn't get what that guy got. I don't understand what God is trying to do. That's completely left aside now. And he says, be kind to others. Be good to others. Provide for them, knowing that one day you'll need the same. He then takes that into a more generalized view of work. And he says, understand, and this will kind of pick up the next two or three verses. He says, understand that all of your work is going to involve a certain amount of risk. Now, he's going to really draw this out here in a couple of verses. But just the idea is, he says, don't be the kind of person who sits around and says, well, you know, I would do that, but I might get hurt doing it. Well, I would do that, but it might be a failure. I would do that, and what happens? This person never does anything. The work is never accomplished. And so the writer here is saying, understand that when you do work, that it's going to involve risk. And I think it goes back to something we talked about yesterday. You know, when he says, understand that death can come very quickly upon you. You know, when you're going about your daily activities, when you're going about your work, things may happen. He says, but that should not keep you from doing the work that God has given you to do. Now, he also says, and this I think is a very big part of this section, is that when you are transcending the sun, you don't allow apathy to be involved in anything you undertake. Remember that from yesterday? Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. Here is someone who maybe gets the wrong idea about his book. And someone reads Ecclesiastes and the person says, well, if this is what life is all about, I'm just going to sit around. I'm not going to be involved in any of these things if it's not going to turn out well. He says, no. He says, it's far from that. That when you consider your work, you do it mightily to the Lord. You don't let apathy have any place in it. And then finally, he said, well, he talks about using that common knowledge to make decisions, basing on the wisdom that we've been talking about. But then, and I think this is such an important part of this passage, he says, don't wait till the optimal time to do the work at hand. Look at these verses down, going down to verse 4 in particular. He says, he who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. You ever known anybody like this? Or maybe we'll get a little more personal. You ever been like this? There's a job that you just simply don't want to do, and so the time is never right. You know, you say, well, I really need to get out there and mow the yard, but it's too hot. I'm going to wait till it cools down. And then when it cools down, you say, well, it's a little too wet from the dew. I better wait till it dries up. And then when it dries up, it's hot again. And you just never get it done. That's the idea of laziness. That's the idea that the writer addresses in Proverbs, and I think here as well. When you are working for the Lord, especially, you're never going to find the perfect opportunity. You know, at least in under the sun kind of thinking. You're never going to find that golden moment when everything just lines up perfectly. There's always going to be risk involved. There's always going to be a certain amount of difficulty involved in it. And so he says, when you're presented with a job to do, just dig in and do it. Just don't sit around waiting and saying, well, I'm going to wait till everything is exactly the way it needs to be. His point is, you'll never get it done. Now contrast this idea with what we've been looking at in the book. What a distinction that is from these ideas that we've been looking at under the sun. The idea that work is really not that profitable, that you're going to do all of this and you're going to die, and it's going to be gone. Somebody else is going to get it. He doesn't even bring that into the conversation now. He says, here's the attitude that you need to have when that work is being done. Now, second topic that he returns to, and this is one that we have hit with every observation. This is the way he ends at the conclusion to every observation. He's going to tell us we need to be filled with joy. We need to be a people who are happy. We need to be a people who are joyful people. Hey, and if you look on down to verse 7, we see that point being made. When he says light is sweet and it's pleasant to the eyes to see the sun. So if a person lives many years, let him rejoice in them all. But let him remember that the days of darkness will be many. All that comes is vanity. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these things God will bring you into judgment. Remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body, for youth and the dawn of life are vanity. And I think that latter word, vanity, there, as we talked about Monday, is used more in the sense of an enigma. We said that vanity can be used several ways. The idea of something that maybe we don't fully understand. All right, so what's his point here as he talks about this joy that we need to experience? He returns to that idea. You are to enjoy life. It is a command from God to enjoy life. Sometimes I don't think we consider that. We think, well, if we are joyful, that's nice, but it's really not required. I tell you, after this little run through Ecclesiastes, I believe it is required. I believe God is saying, you are to take the things that I have given you, and you are to be joyful, understanding bad things are going to happen. But still, you don't allow that to rob you. And I think it quite interesting in this section. He says, basically, no matter how long you live, you are to be joyful. Sometimes the older we get, the more crotchety we get. You know, we start thinking, well, I have earned my right to complain. And so I can complain about being tired, and I can complain about being sick, and I can complain about my children, I can complain about, you know, and we think we've almost become entitled to that. I believe the writer just wipes that out. And he says, no, you're not to get to a point where you're in this chronic state of unhappiness. You're not to get to this point where everything is being viewed as miserable. You are to be a person who's enjoying life, because as we talked about yesterday, it is a gift that God has given, and we are to cherish what He's given to us. Now he continues on, and he says, the reason you need to enjoy every day is because those dark days will come. And I think he's talking about there as we are nearing the end of life, what we'll pick up with in chapter 12. And so he says, you know, appreciate these good days. When you feel good, when you got lots of energy, when you can do what you want to do, appreciate, enjoy those good days. Doesn't mean we stop when the bad days come. It just simply means we use the good days to the very best that we can. And we'll save that thought for just a second, because he'll come back to it. All right, one of the things that I think we need to get from the book of Ecclesiastes is it is a book that young people should be studying. It's a book we should be teaching our teenage classes. And the reason is the writer is saying to us that when we are in your youth, when we are in youth, we are to appreciate and enjoy what we've been given. I want to make an observation that is not original to me. I've forgotten my source, so I guess it is mine now. But somebody said one time, you know, there's only two ages in the Bible. You're young or you're old. There is no middle age in the Bible. So we have to decide where we are. And I think make a logical determination with that. And I think youth in the Bible is basically described as whatever stage you are. When you're feeling good, when you're wanting to get this work done, when you've got the energy, when you've got the mobility to get it done. And so he's talking to young people. We read that and we think teenagers, but we're way limiting if that's our approach. Youth extends far beyond the teenage years. And so he says to people who are young, you need to appreciate what you've been given. You need to understand that God has given you a very great gift here. Now, he does, in a sense, put a clause in there. He says, now remember, everything you do in youth will be brought into judgment. This isn't a blank check idea. Just go out and do whatever you want to, whatever you think makes you happy. He says, remember that all things will be brought into judgment. But nonetheless, when we are in our youth, it is a time that we are to enjoy the wholesome joys that God gives while we're feeling good. And so he tells the young man, as he reads this book, to to go out, to enjoy life, but to make sure that he understands that God is still in the picture. To make sure that he understands that God is not giving a blank check here. All right. So we look at this and we understand, I think all of us can agree, no matter where we are, youth does fly by. It's gone in a hurry. So we use it as well as we can while we're walking the earth. All right, now, we're not making a break here, but the writer is going to take us even deeper into this idea that we've been looking at. Here is the idea of enjoying life. Here's the idea of youth enjoying life. And so now the writer is going to take us on this approach to say, I want you to be aware of what's going on. I want you to have an awareness of what's happening in your life. He's going to start out again, really not breaking the thought that we saw in chapter 11. What he's going to do, though, is basically abandon life under the sun. Now, we've got a couple of more vanities in chapter 12. But for the most part, what he's saying is, as we think about our life with God in our life, let's be aware of what's going on. Let's be aware of what's happening. And so he speaks again to the youth. And he says, verse 1 of chapter 12, probably one of the most quoted passages in the Bible. He says, remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. Let's stop there for just a minute. And as we think about what he's saying here, this exhortation is given to youth. Remember God. Remember your Creator. When? Now. Before what? Before the evil days come. Before the bad days come that he's going to describe, when you feel your energy draining out. When you can't go like you used to go. When you can't do what you used to do. He says, remember God before that happens. This is not a discount of old age. I want us to understand that. The writer is not saying that when we hit a certain point in our life, we're washed up and we can't do anything. Probably you, like me, can think of several people who at some point in your life were years older who were strong encouragements to you to do the right thing. No, here is a focus on youth, though. Here he's talking to youth in particular and saying there's going to come a time when you will not feel like you feel right now. That's hard for us to understand when we're young, because we kind of think that that fountain is just eternal, isn't it? That we're going to feel good always. We're going to beat the odds. We're not going to be like everybody else. Yeah, we are. It's going to happen. And that's what the writer's about to tell us here. And so he says, you got to remember. But that term is not in the sense of recall. That term is used in the sense of a call to action. Remember your Creator. In other words, if you have a danger, if you have a temptation of forgetting who God is while you're young, you make sure you go back and think about this and get busy remembering Him. His call here is to get busy in working for God. Now again, I think that's a point we need to be driving home. When young people are 13, 14, 15, on up, we need to be working very hard to instill in this group that if you have been baptized, you are not a Christian of tomorrow. You are a Christian of today. You are a Christian right now, and you need to be acting like it. You need to be working for the Lord. You need to be recalling your Creator. I think sometimes we get in a bad habit of thinking that you know, at some point, maybe 25, 30, 35, people will kind of sober up and get serious about their spirituality. The writer here is saying, do it young. You start very early remembering the Creator before those evil days, those hard days come. And then he's going to tell us a little bit about old age. He's going to give in very, very poetic terms a picture of growing old. Now, let me just say at the beginning of this, I have read quite a bit on this, and I have seen a number of times where writers try to go through And each of these descriptions, they try to pin to a particular part of old age. Maybe that's right. Yeah, maybe it is. I think we're better suited, though, if we look at this not necessarily as trying to say, okay, here the writer is saying this is when your hair turns green. Here the writer is saying this is when your teeth fall out. Here's where the writer says you can't hear well anymore. Just don't look at it quite like that. Just take it as a picture. The slowing down. The coming off of youth, where life now is beginning to slow, it's beginning to get more difficult, it's harder for us to do the things that we used to do. That's what the writer's trying to get us to understand here. And so again, while it may be a depressing picture in some way, it's beautifully written. The poetry here is just very, very good. Let's go ahead and pick up in verse 2. He's coming off where he's told the young person to remember his creator. Verse 2 says, before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain. In the day when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men are bent and the grinders cease because they are few. And those who look through the windows are dimmed. And the doors of the street are shut when the sound of the grinding is low. And one rises up at the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of song are brought low. They are afraid also of what is high, and terrors are in the way. The almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper drags itself along, and desires fail, because man is going to his eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets. To me, this is a picture almost of a city in shutdown. Here is a city that maybe once was vibrant with life, but now the grinders are moving out, industry's going, doors are closing, the songs of happiness aren't sung like they used to be in the streets. The writer is saying, this is what takes place in our life. Now, don't get depressed by that. The Lord's not saying to us, well, you know, when you hit this age, you've got to start being miserable. Things are shutting down. But what he's saying to young people, again, keeping it in context, is this. One day, this is your description. One day, this is going to happen. One day, you are going to experience what all of these generations preceding you have experienced. And so he gives this picture, and it's complementing that idea of remembering our Creator while we're young. He's saying, use that youth as the gift that's been given. I think as we look at verse 6 in particular, we find here again an idea that the writer is once again kind of talking about that fragility of life. And he inserts it here with this discussion of old age when he says, before. Remember, we're still coming from verse 1. Remember your Creator before the silver cord is snapped, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher is shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. I want you to look at each of these descriptions. You think about this really, really beautiful picture that's painted here. You've got this golden bowl, and it's being held by a silver cord. And it's almost like it's being protected. But the writer says one day that silver cord is going to snap. It's going to break. And down comes that bowl. And it's going to be broken. And what good is a broken bowl? I think he's talking about here the years when we can't do anything. When we get to the point where we're not able to do what we used to do. And he draws that out even further. He says, the pitcher is shattered at the fountain. The wheel is broken at the cistern. He's saying there's going to come a time when you cannot do what you do when you're young. And he says it's like a broken bowl and it's like a shattered pitcher. And here is this bowl at the well and you can't use it to draw water out anymore. So don't forget your Creator. Don't waste those years that you can be serving Him. And he finishes the idea here in verse 7. And he says, and the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns to the God who gave it. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher, all is vanity. under the sun, it may look like we're washed up and done for. In God's eyes, though, it's a tired but faithful servant coming home. Here is God welcoming the spirit of his saint. To the world, it may look like we're washed up and we're done, and what we've wasted our life trying to serve this God who doesn't have anything in control in this world. But we understand, though we don't understand, God knows what he's doing, and he's going to welcome us home at the end. So I tell you, chapter 12 takes us from our youth to our death. And he says, once again, I'm going to take your head and I'm going to make you look at death. I'm going to make you ponder it. I'm going to make you consider it. It will happen to you. So prepare. Use your life as God would have you to use that life. And I think in a lot of ways at this point, the gist of the book, the majority of the book, comes to a close at verse 8. You'll recall on Monday we said if the book was set up in a modern form, we would have the prologue, we would have the chapters, and then we would have the epilogue. And I think beginning in verse 9, we have the epilogue coming now. So verse 8, he ends his discussion. He said, I've explored life under the sun. Don't go there. God is good. God will provide. Use your life for him. Beginning in your youth and continuing just as long as you possibly can. Serve the Lord. Now, as the writer does close off his book, let's think about some of the things that he's going to tell us here. Beginning in verse 9, we're going to see these final thoughts beginning now. Let's just go ahead and read verses 9 down through 14. He says, besides being wise, the preacher also taught the people knowledge, weighing and studying and arranging many proverbs with great care. The preacher sought to find words of delight, and uprightly he wrote words of truth. The words of the wise are like goads and like nails firmly fixed are the collected sayings they are given by one shepherd. My son, beware of anything beyond these. Of making many books there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh. The end of the matter, all that has been heard, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. So the writer is going to make some very basic points on what he's just written. First of all, he says, my work is complete. He says, I have approached life as a scientist has approached his subject. And what I have done is left no stone unturned in my study. Would you agree with that after this week? You know, every time I read through the book of Ecclesiastes, I come to a better appreciation of that. He did not leave anything undone. He did not leave any area unexamined. And so he says to us, this is a complete study of man. What I'm writing for you here is complete. And I think he tells his readers, there is no need for you to reinvent the wheel with this study. He says, the world is full of books, and in much study there is great weariness. Now, he's not discounting being scholarly. What he's saying is, though, here's one of his readers who says, well, I think I'm going to try this for myself. I'm going to do what he did. I'm going to go and live life under the sun, and I'm going to try what he tried. The writer says, you don't need to do it. I've recorded everything about that journey that's been taken. And so I think that's a very good thought for us. That here is a book that we have somewhat tucked away in those books of poetry, but nonetheless, it is a book that is telling us who we are, what we are, how we think, why we think, what we ought to be thinking. And there is no need for any of us to go out and to live this life under the sun to try to figure all of it out. It's all recorded very nicely for us right here. And so what does the writer then say? As he comes to the end of this, just in case we missed it, in all of those observations, he says, let me tell you one more time what life is all about. And so if you'll return with me there to verse 13, he says, the end of the matter, all that has been heard. Here's his conclusion. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. I think sometimes we use this passage almost in a frightening sense. You sometimes hear it during invitations, and that's okay. I mean, the idea there is we need to understand that everything we do is going to be brought into judgment. But to limit it to that idea is not what we need to be doing. The writer is saying here, when you think about your life should belong to God. Don't worry about making a fortune on earth. Somebody else is going to get it. Don't worry about the idea that you've got to be happy, because if you try to be happy under the sun, you won't. He says, "Fear. Let God be your life. Let God completely ingrain your life in everything you do. And then when the Lord brings us into judgment, for those who have been faithful to Him, the Lord is going to give a reward. Those under the sun will not know. But the one who has transcended the sun will fully understand it's been worth it. God really did know what He was doing. And we'll find the complete realization of what the writer is telling us here." So that's the book of Ecclesiastes in a nutshell. Now, we could spend a lot more time with it, but sometimes a good quick study like this helps us to see the big picture. Helps us to understand the foundations of the book. Now, in our last few minutes here, I want to go back and just make a few points that I think we really need to take away from the book. That as we think about our study, a few of the thoughts that we can gain from Ecclesiastes. And the first one, and I tell you, the more I hear, the more I understand, this is a lesson that must be learned. We're never going to understand the ways of God. We are never going to understand it. What can we understand about God? What He's told us in His Word. That's what we can understand. But everything else, God says, trust me. Trust me. I think that is very evident as we look through the law of Moses. Sometimes the book of Leviticus is a little hard to read. But you read through it and there are three words that stand out. Depends on how you read it. Could be four. Where basically he says, I am God, or I am the Lord. Notice that sometime. He'll be going through a list of requirements. You're to do this, you're to do that, you're to do this. And his explanation for it is, I'm God. I am the Lord. And you do it because I said to do it. Children of Israel needed to understand. They didn't have to have a full understanding of why God said to do it. If he said to do it, take care of it. I think as well, the prophet Isaiah, as the Lord is speaking through him, when he says, my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor my ways your ways, says the Lord. And he talks there and several other places within the prophets, as far as the east is from the west, is the difference between your understanding and my understanding. As we have said almost every day this week, we have to understand we are not God. Now, why do I say that's such a big point? I guess every generation has experienced it. Nothing new under the sun. We read that somewhere, didn't we? But what is our generation trying to do with God? He's being remolded in our image, isn't he? We want a God who is fun, and we want a God who will let us do what we want to do, and we change our religion accordingly. And we make it where it's something we like and we enjoy. And obviously, if we like it and enjoy it, then our God will enjoy it too. Something a little wrong with that reasoning. God has given a way that things are to be done. Will we always understand it? No. But what? We better do it the way He said to do it. And I think that is a very major point that we find coming out of the book of Ecclesiastes. It's one that we need to understand very much as we look at this study. Secondly, we need to understand that life under the sun is going to be a disappointment. Now, I want you to avoid a temptation that I've got to avoid as well. Let's not say, you are exactly right. Maybe one day they'll understand that. Maybe they will. But I want us to talk about us. Because we have been immersed in water and come up a Christian does not mean we are somehow now immune to falling to life under the sun. And I think if we're all honest with ourselves, we can look at these passages in Ecclesiastes and we can say, yeah, I see that in my life. I see that as a major temptation, maybe even something I've fallen to or am falling to. We think about the lust for wealth. We think about the idea of bettering ourselves above others, that idea of jealousy that we talked about. We think about all of these things that the writer has brought up within the book. And we find ourselves, I think, sometimes perilously close to falling prey to exactly what he said he did. I'm going to take that eternity in my heart, and I'm going to try to pack it full of worldly things and see if that will satisfy. It's not going to. God has created us as eternal beings, and I don't care who the biggest atheist is in this world, he has eternity in his heart as well. He may deny it, he may try to cover it up, but he understands there's got to be something more than this. But what happens? We try to fill it up and we try to say we've descended from monkeys. There is no God telling us what to do. Or we try to say, I'm going to do things my way. Or we try to say, I'm going to just fill it with as much pleasure as I can. None of that fits. None of it's going to work. We've got to understand that life under the sun is not what we're out for. But we've also got to understand how easily it is to fall prey to that temptation. It's one of the strongest temptations that Satan throws at us, to make us feel like we are at home here. We're not. We're simply biding our time until we go to our true home. And I think the book of Ecclesiastes helps us to understand that. Now, a third point that I'd like for us to see, and this one may sound a little bit odd, but I think it's one that comes out rather clearly in the book of Ecclesiastes. Economics does not determine our spiritual success. Sometimes we look at life in the sense that God blesses his faithful physically. And to an extent he does. To an extent he does. But you think about the book of Job, another one of our poetry books. Here was a group of people who came to Job and said, because you lost everything, surely you must be a big sinner. And I think sometimes that creeps into our own mind. If we don't have the same wealth that everyone else has, if we don't have everything that we think we need, we sometimes think God isn't blessing us too much. I'll tell you something. Sometimes withholding that from us is the biggest blessing that God can give to us. Sometimes, for some of us, it may be God looks down and he says, you can't handle it. It'll cost you your soul. And withholding those things from us actually is the best thing that God does. So, I think the writer makes that point so clearly with his discussion of riches. Don't think that riches determine your success. As well, boy, this is a big one. The writer is saying to us, our righteousness has got to be more than surface deep. Remember when he said, don't be overly righteous? The idea there, don't be self-righteous. Don't think you have all the answers. As we have said before, no amount of wisdom answers every question in life. And the person who says, I've got an answer to everything, secular and spiritual, is a fool. That's what the Bible would call it. The Pharisees had a problem with this. But the Pharisees didn't invent Pharisaism. It's been around since the beginning of man. It's still around now. And sometimes we convince ourselves and we say, well, I go to church 3 times a week. I don't cuss. I don't drink. I don't do any of these things. I'm a pretty good person. And maybe we are. But it's got to be deeper than that. Why are we doing these things? So people will say, what a wonderful guy I am. No. It's to please God. That's what everything's got to come from. It's got to be pleasing to him if our righteousness is going to be of the depth that God desires for it to be. Finally, and we have made this point over and over again because the writer has made this point over and over again. The writer has said to us, you be very aware that death is on its way. Death is coming. We don't want to be depressed by that. We don't want to live our lives saying, well, I don't guess I can get involved in anything since death might come. But the Lord tells us through this writer, you be very aware. You may have 100 years, or you may have 10, or you may have 25. But whatever you have, use it for Him. And when this life is over, whenever it comes to a close, then you're going to be rewarded by the Lord. But let's not fall into the trap that our society has fallen into. Have you noticed all of these things? I see the slogan so often, 50 is the new 30. No, 50 is still the same old 50. Yeah. It's still the same. And I don't care how much anti-aging cream you put on your face, you are going to age. It's coming. And if you dress like a teenager when you're 70, you're still 70. That's what the Lord is saying. Death is coming. Don't try to ignore it. Don't try to be frivolous with it. Understand that this life will end and we'll be called into that reckoning. But we want to be in the part of those people who fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Thank you so much for being here this week. I know we've had several visitors here every day, and we really do appreciate that. And for all the members here at Oakland, thank you for inviting me, and I hope this has been beneficial for us to study this week.